He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council back there pushing some buttons. Bearded intern really keeping him under control. It's Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Been a fun morning so far. You heard it in the update. Paul Kariya, Hall of Famer, congratulations. The second person to have spent some time in Nashville to have that distinction. Although I wouldn't really call him he was a Predator for a second.
Two years.
It was what felt like a blip, but it was a very special blip for all of us.
There was a Predators blip on the College World Series radar last night.
Oh.
Row 3, College World Series. Predators gold jersey right there, baby.
Yay.
Well, you're not excited about the Preds getting love in other venues?
Yeah.
Come on.
I'm just not excited about the significance of the College World Series. So to me, that's like saying somebody wore a Pred shirt to a Sounds game. All right. So
why would you talk so negatively about the Sounds like that?
You're right. Actually, the Sounds,
are a lot of fun.
Sounds far better than a.
You're selling an event short without going.
I love going to Sounds games. I've had a blast at Sounds games. So we've been talking all morning about coaching expectations. We've been talking all morning about, the hot seats and what people think. And it's funny because it's turned into sort of a theme for the show today, because the NFL has the same sort of situation brewing right now. We talked about SEC expectations, especially for fans. I would argue that AFC South fans today, no matter which city you're in, if you're in Indy, Houston, here, or Jacksonville, you right now are making an argument that your team has improved and your team has improved enough to win the division. And I think that's true across the board, because everybody's going to give benefit of the doubt right now. If you're a Colts fan,
it's ever Jacksonville, then I have to kick you in the no-no.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to get, but Jacksonville fans are sitting back and saying, look at all of the acquisitions.
In Tom Coughlin, we trust?
Yeah, Tom Coughlin's going to find a way to – Doug Marrone's going to find a way to maximize the new head coach over there, Tom Coughlin, the new GM. He's got a better football mind, and Calais Campbell, their big defensive acquisition, is going to come in and just be a stud. So Jacksonville fans
– Bortles.
Yeah.
Bortles.
But you know what? Marrone's going to turn
you
it around.
Suck.
They're going to turn it around. That's what Jacksonville fans are saying. And I think Houston fans are saying, look, we can have trash quarterback and still win the division. Now we have Deshaun Watson. And Colts fans are saying there's no concern about the fact that Andrew Luck hasn't thrown. Yeah, he'll be fine by the regular season, and that's what really matters. So I think all of those fan bases today have unrealistic expectations that they're going to take a massive jump forward.
Do you think I would say it's unrealistic for Jacksonville, but do you think it's unrealistic for Indianapolis to win one more game and win the division? I mean, they were one game back of the division. Titans were one game back of the division, and the Texans won the division one game up.
Yeah, I don't feel good about the Colts just because I still think that.
Seems to be the team everybody talks about, too. They all mention it. Andrew Brandt mentioned it. I mean, they all mention it.
Well, and there's a little bit of a you get benefit of the doubt when you have Andrew Luck and when you've been a good franchise more years than not for the last 15 years, you know. So I think that that's a little bit of what plays into it. I just don't feel great about the Colts necessarily right away coming in and being better.
Here's my question for you. When we talked Nick Saban and what he's done to the rest of the SEC, the expectations for 2-8, right, in the SEC. What about expectations in the AFC 2-8? Is that a fair comparison to say Brady and Belichick have just made all the other coaches sort of these big question marks? I mean, Mike Mularkey did a good job in year one, but Bill O'Brien, we all thought was a great hire. There are some question marks there. We think Andy Reid's a great coach, but how many times has he gone to the playoffs and lost? I mean, Mike Tomlin, you're getting questioned in the media, Mike, unfairly, I would say, but Mike Tomlin's a cheerleader now, according to Terry Bradshaw. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Which is totally unfair, but it's the Belichick effect.
I would agree with that. I think when you look at the power structure of the AFC particularly, I think the AFC is stacked. And you mentioned, obviously, the Patriots, who I have to stress, if you haven't been paying attention to the NFL, the Patriots got drastically better. I mean, not just a little better. The Patriots got drastically better. They traded for a true number one wide receiver.
How is that even a thing?
They basically gave up a bag of stale cheesy poofs, and they got themselves a true number one.
Cheesy poofs?
Cheesy poofs. Got themselves a number one wide receiver for it. They signed what most considered to be the best corner available in free agency, brought him in, and their scrap, their trash, is what the Titans have signed. And turn that into sort of a – well, I mean, that's what they did. They turned around and looked at it and said, we don't want Logan Ryan. We want Stephon Gilmore.
A business decision. He wasn't trash, maybe.
Yeah, but at some point –
seems a little harsh.
They decided to pay Stephon Gilmore more than they were willing to offer Logan Ryan. So they were willing to pay somebody that wasn't in their camp all year more than the guy that they knew about. And I think that makes a statement, guys.
They're trying to trade Malcolm Butler the whole year.
I mean,
and they still have him.
Right. For now. Let's see how that goes.
Right.
But ultimately, they spent a lot of their money. They got better. So I think if you're whatever you decide the second best team in the AFC is, whether it's the Chiefs, the Steelers, the Raiders, I think there's a large gap between one and two for all of them. And frankly, I think that there's still a large gap between those teams.
That's what I'm going to ask.
And the AFC South.
So there's a tier after the Patriots that you think exists, and the South is not. Nobody on the South in the AFC South is on that next tier.
No. Not until we see how Deshaun Watson can play. I think that the Texans take a little bit of a step back when they bring in Deshaun because he's a rookie. He's going to make some mistakes. But I think that by the end of the year, the Texans will be playing very well. But I think relying on a rookie quarterback to suddenly lead that team is not going to be the easiest thing in the world. If they had anybody at quarterback that we could slightly believe in, I think they'd be the number two team in the AFC.
So
that's how much I appreciate what the Texans are.
Okay. So is the tier then – the tier has to then involve – So, okay, the second tier, in your opinion, Kansas City, Oakland, and Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
In your mind, behind New England.
Right.
Who the next tier then has to include Houston, Indianapolis, and Tennessee.
Right.
Who else is on that tier?
I think Baltimore's going to rebound and be a better football team than they were last year, so I think Baltimore has an opportunity. The Dolphins played surprisingly well. I think that you've got a lot of teams clumped in right there that are all – I wouldn't be surprised if half of them finished, you know, 10.
Is Denver on that list?
Denver's on that list for sure. Denver's for sure on that list. You know, it depends on what happens at quarterback. That's the funny thing you say so often with many of these teams. How's the quarterback play going to be? And that's why I think everybody has a lot of faith here, and rightfully so. But understand that this is year three for Mariota to take a massive step forward as well.
Does Buffalo, the Chargers, certainly have their quarterback situation figured out? Any belief in any other program, any other team?
I don't love the Chargers.
Cincinnati?
I don't love the Chargers. I don't love Cincinnati. I don't think any of those teams got drastically better. And I keep waiting for the Chargers to be better, but they're just not. You know, when you see them every year, I think, much like Jacksonville, they're sort of like the Jacksonville of the West. Every year you think, this team's going to be pretty good, and then they're not. Buffalo is sort of an enigma. I don't really know what to expect out of Buffalo in this season.
So, at least San Diego's in ball games, though.
Yeah, San Diego is always – San Diego can score, and there's nothing – you can't take anything away from Phillip Rivers. In fact, the Raiders – it took flukes for the Raiders and the Broncos to beat San Diego last year. So San Diego is a better football team than the record indicated. And Joey Bosa, by the way, is a stud.
New coaching staff.
Right.
We'll see how that works. So essentially we're going the top four, which we've got established, New England, Pittsburgh, Oakland, and Kansas City. That would be the first – that would be four playoff spots. Or – four playoff spots, the top three seeds in theory,
right.
and then one wild card. So then you've got three teams for one spot in the AFC South to win the division, and then you're basically talking the other two from the South that don't win, Miami, Denver, and Baltimore.
Yeah.
So you have five teams fighting for one playoff spot, essentially.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
This is why you have to be good in the division in the AFC South. For the Tennessee Titans.
Absolutely. And this is the difference between, you know, it always goes cyclically. And you'll remember this, Brayden, when we were a kid. And I know I'm a little older than you, but there was that period where the NFC just thrashed AFC every year. And
crushed.
It was just boring. I think that it usually goes.
Late 80s, early 90s was all NFC.
And it goes in cycles. Right now, I believe that top to bottom, the AFC is stronger than the NFC. So it's sort of bad timing to be getting good because there's a lot of teams in the AFC that have improved in the last couple of years.
Could be some windows closing, though. I mean, how much longer is New England's window open? How much longer is Pittsburgh's window open? I mean, couple more years for both of those teams?
Hopefully.
Maybe there's a new guard. I mean, you know, like that's the hope, is Mariota is part of the new guard that steps forward. Derek Carr is part of the new guard that steps forward. You know, Alex Smith, I don't think Alex Smith is a long-term solution. They drafted Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
But he's a project.
Some people think Mahomes might get the opportunity this year, which would be – Julian Council would be heartbroken.
I think Tennessee Titans fans should be ecstatic if Patrick Mahomes is the starting quarterback in Kansas City.
Well,
as a Raiders fan should be ecstatic if Patrick Mahomes is the starting quarterback.
It's not going to happen, guys. Alex Smith, I told you –
he's too consistent.
I told you he will find a way to finally win a Super Bowl in Kansas City. Not this year, though. I have my money on Oakland.
Nice. I'll take that all day long. I will be insufferable.
Not because I think Oakland's going to win, because I made a bet with my buddy at the lake. So,
I'll take it however I can get it, Julian. I will be insufferable if they and I'll admit that.
I mean, Pittsburgh offensively is unbelievable.
Right.
Defensively, they've tried to rebuild in phases, and it hasn't worked as well as I think they've planned. Oakland obviously sort of has all of the pieces. I mean, there's a lot to like about Oakland when you start looking around. Now, again, same thing with the Titans. The quarterback stays healthy, and you feel really good about that team's chances in a one-game playoff situation. Like,
similar to that, both teams have weak secondaries. That's the one. Yeah. If they have a weakness that needs to, I won't say weak. They both have unproven secondaries that you have to look at and
middle
say,
linebacker.
Yeah, where are we on that? You
not
know,
it's great.
I think that there's some similarities between the two teams in
very
that
much
sense.
So. Great offensive lines.
Yeah.
Also, have we seen out here? Pro Football Focus has the Titans with the third best roster in the league behind the Patriots and Falcons. So by that logic, it seems like it's Super Bowl or bust here in Nashville.
Let's just get the hype train out of control.
I'm just telling you, like, right?
Super Bowl. Peter King's got him number four in the NFL.
It's gotten out of control. I understand it's June and this is, like, the optimism season, the silly season
so
right
how,
now.
The
but they are on Pro Football Focus that does analytics, which people buy into nowadays, has the Titans with the third best roster.
So,
what's happening?
So here's the question for all three of us. How much brake pumping do we have to do then?
Oh, we're I'm going off the road, man.
Power slide?
Like, yeah. I'm talking about like I'm hydroplaning right now.
Gran Turismo style, just like, around the corner. Yeah.
So there's a couple really smart football minds on this station, on other shows. And in
no,
the afternoon,
not this one.
Yeah, and in the afternoon, Floyd Reese, one of the smartest of them, said something yesterday that validated something. You want to know how much brake pumping we're going to do? When we come back.
All right. You're going to pump the brakes?
I'm going to tell you why I don't think the Titans are going to win the division.
That's some brake pumping.
That's some brake pumping. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Save the date for business after hours at Nissan Stadium, home of the Tennessee Titans, Wednesday, June 28th from 5 to 7 p.m. Business after hours is the ideal opportunity to develop relationships, walk away with new connections, market your business to more than 150 attendees. Hang out Wednesday from 5 to 7 p.m. over at Nissan Stadium. Going to be a blast. So I'm pumping the brakes, and I'm just throwing it out there right out of the gates.
Let's set the scene here for this.
Sure, sure.
So, Julian, we've got – so Peter King Peter King has the Tennessee Titans as the number fourth best team in the NFL. Now, Athlon Sports has the Titans as the fifth best team in the AFC. So that's keep that in mind. That's probably about 10th, right, in the NFL. Julian, what else do we have?
Pro Football Focus, the leader in football analytics nowadays, has the Titans with the third best roster in the NFL behind the Atlanta Falcons and New England Patriots.
Okay.
And don't let that distract you from the fact that Falcons blew a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Okay.
And Peyton's record against Florida is?
0-4, okay. Obviously.
And you saw what, Sports Illustrated,
is
that correct?
Yeah, Jonathan Jones on Sports Illustrated. I haven't read the article. I'm not really sure whether he was actually pumping up the Titans. But I do know that
names are important.
No, it's important. Greg Bishop, who wrote the Monday Morning Quarterback yesterday, his first 10 things I think was about the Titans and how he thinks that they are going to win the AFC South and could be a team that plays deep into the playoffs.
So, we're seeing, I mean, top 5 in the NFL from Pro Football Focus and Peter King. Go ahead, Fitz.
Yeah, they're not going to win the division. I mean, I think this is pretty simple. I mean, right now, if you're asking me today, can they win the division? Sure. Are they talented enough to win the division? Absolutely. But let's go back to what even Floyd said yesterday on what are we going to call that? We'll call that Ryan and the GM, as our esteemed leader, Ryan Porth, was sitting in yesterday. And I'm listening to it, and here's Floyd. And what does Floyd say? Floyd says, you got to beat Indianapolis. You actually have to beat these teams for me to see it. Jacksonville is going to be better. Whether we like that or not, I'm not buying into Jacksonville. Don't kick me in the no-no
places.
That
sounds like you deserved a kick buddy.
Jacksonville is going to be better.
God, I want to kick you in the no-no places so bad.
The other side of it is they can't beat the Texans. Or they can't beat the Colts. They just can't beat the Colts.
Well, and they didn't beat the Texans in a meaningful game. They beat them at the end of the year when the Texans already wrapped up the division. They lost to Jacksonville. They've split with Jacksonville every year for, what, like 7 straight years, something crazy like that. And they're, what, 1-15 against the Colts.
Right.
So it's across the board in the division. They've got to show a prove-it sort of moment in the division. And everybody we talk to, they're always kind of like, yeah, Indianapolis, watch out for Indianapolis. There's a lot of people that are sort of buying into the Colts right now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure I'm there yet with the offensive line, but as long as Andrew Luck is healthy, which is a question, but if Andrew Luck is healthy, who's to say that the Colts can't be? I mean, they were right there last year with a garbage offensive line and an unhealthy Andrew Luck.
This, to me, is a lot like the conversation we had about the Vols the other day. If you are buying in that the Titans are going to win the division, you are buying in that all of their moves work and nobody else's does. That's the part of this that I can't make sense. Because if you want to take all or none, if you want to take none of the Titans' moves work, none of the Texans' moves work. If everybody just fails with their draft picks, their free agency, and they're all exactly what they were last year, essentially, I'd still have to look at it and say the Texans were the best team. They won without J.J. Watt. They did everything they did last year without J.J. Watt. So I still go to the Texans are the best team. So if all of them fail, the Texans are still the best team in the division. If all of them succeed across the board and you've got, hey, you know what, Corey Davis is lights out, Adoree Jackson's fantastic. If you want to take all of these things as a plus, then you also in the same conversation have to say, and Deshaun Watson just throws down. Whatever level of awesomeness you expect from Corey Davis, match that level of awesomeness from Deshaun Watson, the Texans are winning the division.
So I agree with you if everything is matched. But here's the question. Could Deshaun Watson be the right decision for the Texans and also create a small step back in this particular season? That's because he's a rookie at that position. Whereas Corey Davis is playing a position that could step in and be you can be better at wide receiver much quicker than you can at quarterback, let's say. So that's my question is, could the Texans get better with J.J. Watt on being back? It was the right move to go get Deshaun Watson. But that also causes them to lose one or two more games.
And that's
that possible where it's the right thing for them to do, but it caused them a game somewhere or
so
two?
So I would take the argument, and I said this when Deshaun was drafted. Bill O'Brien has a very difficult offense for people to learn. There's a lot for a rookie there. You have to be a very bright kid to wrap your head around it. So I think that there is the opportunity for a step back. That being said, how many times have we heard about the conflict within the organization between Bill O'Brien and the GM there, Rick Smith, the GM in Houston? And a lot of it has to do with player selection and quarterback selection. Bill O'Brien has a guy now that he wants, a guy that he wanted to bring in. Bill O'Brien is going to do everything in his power to keep his job in this process and prove that he's the smartest guy in the room. I just think that the just that in and of itself and the ego push that Bill O'Brien has and will push behind wanting to make sure that his quarterback plays his way and that he can be smarter than the GM. I think I just don't see a situation where if Deshaun Watson goes in and plays hard and works hard, I don't see where he will be a fail for them if I'm also going to take Corey Davis as a success.
Yeah, I just think the quarterback position, you can be – like Peyton Manning threw 28 interceptions in his first season. So I think there's a learning curve that's okay for even really great players. I mean, Deshaun Watson is a great player, and when he steps in, it still could cost him two games. Like he could be the answer. He could step in and show that he's the answer, that Bill O'Brien is the smartest guy in the room, all those things you're talking about, and it still costs them a game or two down the road because you're a first-time starter in the NFL. And that's just the nature of that position.
Sure.
at times. Now, it doesn't mean that he's not good enough to be great, too. I mean, Marcus Mariota didn't win many games his first year, but showed that he clearly had it, right? I mean, that Jameis Winston didn't win a ton of games his rookie year, but showed that he had it or whatever.
And Derek Carr started 0-10.
Exactly. And again, Peyton Manning, almost 30 interceptions in his rookie season, one of the greatest quarterbacks that's ever lived. So I think that's the one thing that makes the Texans unique, is that a veteran quarterback, had they gone out and gotten Jay Cutler, for example, we would not even be having this discussion. I think we'd be saying the Texans are the favorite in the division. The Watson angle is what makes the Texans an interesting dilemma, because he could be really, really good. He could be really, really good and not good this year, or he could just be not good at all. And there's really no way to know about that at this stage of the season. By the way, Bob Williams on Twitter says, not only will the Titans win the Super Bowl, but we'll shut out every opponent along the way.
Oh, perfect. That's
totally pumping the brakes.
I will say this too. Keep this in mind. This is a relatively young football team, right? That had a lot of close games. And that's part of why I've said I think the Raiders, even though I think they'll be very good, could take a step back in record. I don't think they'll be 12-4. I think they could take a step back. That being said, think about the beginning of the Titans schedule. And I know this is a long way out. But they start with Oakland.
It's never too early to play a schedule game.
They start with Oakland. Then they have Jacksonville, who they've split with every year. They have Jacksonville and Jacksonville. After that, they have Seattle, who we will all expect to be a very, very good football team. We have the Texans team that I just said I think is still the favorite. A Miami team that we just turned around and said would be in the playoff hunt. And then they have Indianapolis on a Monday night, who has always beaten the Titans. They could lose four of their first six games. And then how a young team responds to that, there's a lot of variables here. And I'd like to think that they'll succeed in all of the variables. But when you look at that and then you talk about who's after that, they have Baltimore, another team we just said is in the playoff hunt. They have Pittsburgh, another team we obviously think is in the playoff hunt. I mean, this is not an easy year, and it's not an easy start in particular for the Titans. And you compare that.
I like the finish, though. If there's one thing you want to talk about the Titans' schedule, when you go at San Francisco, L.A., Rams, and Jacksonville to finish,
yep,
you could make up some ground there at the back end. But we also saw this, and to play a devil's advocate, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of games that are losable there, but this is the whole point. This is what makes the NFL the NFL. All those games we thought were losable last year, Denver, Green Bay, Kansas City, right?
Right.
All playoff teams, or almost playoff teams. One was the defending Super Bowl champ. They went and beat them. So, like, it's just weird. Like, they can't beat Jacksonville or Indianapolis, but they can beat Denver, Kansas City, and Green Bay.
Right.
Like, that's the way the NFL works, is it just is completely unpredictable.
No doubt. But then when you look at the other side of it, the Texans' schedule for Deshaun, he's going to have some challenges in it, too. Jacksonville, a couple of days later, Cincinnati on a Thursday night right out of the gate. Then they have to go to New England. Then they have to come. Then they have Tennessee and Kansas City. So it starts rough for Deshaun. I think part of the reason people like the Colts, they start with the Rams. They start with an Arizona team that a lot of people think is going to be failing. They have Cleveland, Seattle, San Francisco. I mean, the Colts are going to
– 4-1-ish.
They should come out hot. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how all of this – counterbalances. So I just don't
and they've won 15 out of 16 against the Titans.
And that's the biggest part of it to me, is that the Titans did not particularly play well. First, they played up to great opponents last year, but they did not play particularly well within their division against division opponents. You got to prove you're going to do that before I'm going to turn around and buy into it. And I think that as good as this offensive line is, and as good as Marcus Mariota is, the defensive lines across the board in the South have gotten better. It's going to be more difficult. It's going to be really interesting to see how it plays.
So let me continue the SEC comparison, because we're saying the Patriots are Alabama and the AFC is the SEC. So is the AFC South not the SEC East?
Yeah.
Where you have three teams that you think are basically dead even, and you could throw a dart and pick one out of a hat and feel good about picking Indianapolis, Houston, or Tennessee. Same thing as Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee.
Yeah.
In the SEC East. I mean, that's sort of how it feels. It feels like the West, the AFC West, and the Patriots and the Steelers are like the SEC West. And the AFC South is like the SEC East, and we really don't know what to expect out of any of those teams. But we think they're going to be okay. Like, we think they're going to be good, winning records, but how good?
Well, we'll get some more thoughts on the SEC in general from Charles Arbuckle. Not easy for me to say this morning. One of our favorite guys. We're going to bring it on. Arbuckle, host coming on next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. The conversation all morning has been running around expectations in the NFL and in college football. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz, and we want to get back to the conversation and how it relates to the SEC, specifically with one of our favorite guys that knows more about the SEC than most of us will forget, Charles Arbuckle, joining us. Man, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, man. How are you guys?
We're great, man. So wrap my head around a little bit about what you think. When I say Butch Jones, expectations at Tennessee, what do you think of this year?
Well, you almost have to throw everybody in that hodgepodge. I have to bring in Georgia to the equation, because, you know, we keep talking about Jacob Eason, if he can play at a high level, and the running back situation we know is solidified with the guys back there. If he can take that next step and the offensive line can protect him, then you have to look around to Florida. A quarterback potpourri that they have there. They can't decide who's going to be the guy. Is it Zaire? Is it Felipe Franks? I mean, who's going to be their quarterback? So I say all that to say Tennessee had the high expectations last year, and now they're not so high, but I know pressure is on when you hire a former national championship winner and Phil Fulmer to be, you know, a handshaker and a fundraiser. That doesn't probably make Butch Jones feel the happiest. But there's pressure in Tennessee for them to succeed and go to the next level after having lost a lot of the guys that they had. So I think if you look at that SEC East, we've seen them get to the, you know, whoever's been out of there, get to the SEC championship game, and it's been Florida most recently, and haven't been able to do much with it. And I think Butch would love to have that opportunity to get there. Now, does he have the dogs to do it? That's the question.
I got a lot of questions about the SEC West, but I need to know, are you turning left or right, or do you have the hazards on?
I'm turning left, but I can turn it off so you cannot hear it. I mean, you know.
You got to be safe, dude. Don't turn it off. You got to be safe.
That's a long left turn you've been waiting for, Buck.
I know. The light has been endless, but it's given me a chance to go on and on and on about the SECs.
So let me ask you about the West then, because Kevin Sumlin, Brett Bielema, Gus Malzahn, they're all in the same boat too. Like, it's all I don't know if expectations are too high for Texas A&M. Texas A&M has sort of largely underachieved its entire existence other than like a six-year window in the late 80s. You're from that state. Yep. Why is Texas A&M not better?
You know, I think the Johnny Manziel effect hurt them more than anything. If you look at, you know, they were, 12-2, I think, his year that he played. There was a lot of talk about them really then making that next step. You know, they've recruited well, and I just don't know. It's been interesting to watch Texas A&M because I didn't think they were going to have as much success right away when they got to the conference. But they've done a pretty nice job, and it's been hard to figure out with all the recruiting classes and all the guys that they get, the talent that they have. The bottom line is, you know, Braden, I think for me, I knew Texas A&M as a wrecking crew defense. I knew those guys that could get after you on defense. And I don't see that now the way I saw it then. They've really struggled at the linebacker position, and they have to get better there. They've been able to score, but they haven't been able to stop people. And I think that's going to be key for me to watch that linebacker position. Tara Alaka, can he make plays? They've been talking about him for years. Tyrell Dotson, linebacking. And then you have John Chavis, who's the head coach. I mean, you know, a guy that's been considered a potential head coach in the past, coaching that defense, and the defense hadn't gotten better. The key in the SEC, as you guys all know, if you can't stop the run, you're not going to be a good team. And A&M has not been able to stop the run. And I'm looking forward to seeing that change and seeing maybe Daylon Mack step up. He's a guy, you know, I think what I see with Texas A&M over the last few years is they've got a lot of kids that were highly recruited, 4 and 5 stars, but haven't been able to develop once they get on campus, and it shows up on Saturdays when they play.
So let me ask you a question, Buck. When you think about the SEC East, part of our conversation has been a little bit about the bottom of the conference and the fact that their record has been better of late. Is that a situation where you feel like the bottom of the SEC has gotten better, or is that a situation where, frankly, the top of the SEC has fallen off a little bit and it's allowed them to be more competitive?
I think you look at it in two ways. I think the bottom has gotten better if we consider Vanderbilt and Kentucky and some of the teams that have been, you know, we see them more recently beating teams at the top. I think the other thing is the chasm between Alabama and the other team seems to have gotten somewhat larger over the last few years. It stands for Auburn. You know, every now and then we have a team that'll pop up. Ole Miss will beat Alabama but can't get the deal done. So I think you have a couple of things. You have Alabama that's really started to take this trajectory away from some of the other teams, and then you have some of the bottom teams, the teams that haven't really been perennial winners, start to play better. So you got a lot of teams right there, that middle, that hodgepodge middle, and Bama's kind of still lording over them. And Braden, you asked it earlier, that Bama being who they are has made it a lot tougher for a lot of these coaches, and it has made it hard to figure out how to win ball games and how to compete at a high level.
Well, so, I mean, and then that leads to the next question. Is it, do fans in the SEC just need to take a step back and say, hey, if we get to Atlanta, especially in the East with Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee, they just say, hey, you know, we've gotten to the championship game once every 4 or 5 years, but until Nick Saban retires, there's no point?
Well, logically you can say that, but the passion in that fan base, hell no, they're not going to do it. You know, I mean, come on, man, we all cover this game. And you guys know as well as I do, the minute I get off air with you guys, I'm going to get, I don't know how many tweets about, well, you didn't say enough about my team. Well, dude, I can't say in a 10-minute soundbite everything you want me to say about Team X, Y, and Z. And that's how their fan base is. I mean, you got everybody thinks their team should be at the top. And that's just not going to happen when you have Alabama recruiting the way they are. I think the one team that, you know, I don't know what to think of LSU. And that's the one question mark I have. They have been able to recruit like Alabama, but haven't been able to show a quarterback and haven't been able to do some other things. But if LSU ever decides to say, okay, we're going to be a little bit more diverse on offense and we're going to let our guys on defense play like they do, they usually match up pretty well against Alabama offense to defense, rather their defense. And they've lost some guys this year, but I'm just intrigued by what Ed Orgeron is going to do over there this year, because everybody's thinking Auburn is a sexy pick, right? But somebody has to be able to play with Alabama stride for stride, and nobody has been able to do that consistently except for Ole Miss a couple of years, and then they couldn't beat anybody else. If Ole Miss ever decided to run the football or got a guy that could run the football, we may be talking different. Yeah. So to answer your question, I can say, that logically they should – you know, calm down and think about it in a logical fashion. But, man, we've covered this game way too long. You know those fans. The Vanderbilt fans are probably starting to think, we should win the SEC East. I mean, it's just that passion. I think Derek Mason has done a nice job there. But I think you got to be logical in thinking, hey, we've got some teams here that can play. We're paying all our coaches $3, $4 million apiece. There's some good players here. And look, Arkansas thinks they should win every game. We know what they have to do. So I think that's what makes it so interesting, guys. Before the season starts, we can speculate, but the fans are not going to take a chill pill. They're going to still be, my team is the best team ever, and y'all know that.
One of the best in the business, guys. Follow him on Twitter, at Charles Arbuckle, man. We always appreciate your time out there, my friend. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, y'all have a good one. Thanks for having me.
Love having him on.
So I want to get into this when we come back, but – it's not an SEC superiority thing, but from a fandom standpoint, me as a college football fan, you as a fan of the sport, not of a team, because you're a perfect example. I'd like to know if that is sort of what makes the SEC so intriguing. Not necessarily the best conference, not like, hey, my conference is better than yours, but the fact that 7 or 8 fan bases believe that they should be winning a championship is not the same in any other league.
All right, we'll dive into that. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN. 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Braden and Fitz live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. Charles Arbuckle joining us. I have to really slow down when I say Charles Arbuckle.
Arbuckle. It's a very proper name.
There's
very
a lot of
formal
R's
name.
In it for me.
Sounds like he was like a member of the royal family in England in like the 1700s.
He's very well spoken and sort of has that presence.
The UCLA
about
education.
Him. Right. He has that presence about him. I mean, and a heck of a hugger.
He is a good hugger. That's true. Also weird that we both know that.
Or is it?
I think what's interesting there is he goes, come on, y'all, you know you can't expect fan bases to settle down, and it's why there's two things I kind of always say. First of all, fan isn't short for rational or reasonable. Fan is short for fanatic for a reason. And the other thing I always say about being a sports fan in general is there's a very fine line between being a great fan and a really awful human being. When you start giving death threats to kickers, you've crossed over from great fan to awful human being.
Right.
When you start giving Jason Fitz's wife death threats on Twitter, you've crossed over.
Yes.
From awful fan, from great fan into awful human being. When LSU and Alabama play and two people get in a shotgun fight and someone dies, you've crossed over. Like, that doesn't happen when Purdue and Illinois play. Okay.
Right.
People don't die over that. Nobody is getting shot when Virginia Tech and Miami play. Like,
right.
It's not happening. So I think while the SEC fans are the best, there is a major fault in that as well. They are the most passionate fans, top to bottom. I'm not talking about any one school here. I'm saying, like we talked about yesterday, it's not about Texas or Oklahoma or Ohio State or even Clemson or whatever. It's about every team in the conference, top to bottom. The fans in the SEC are more passionate to a fault. They cheat more. Their schools are on probation more. Their boosters try to cheat more. Like, it's – the SEC is just a dirtier conference than every other conference, but they also care more about their teams top to bottom, and that is what, to me, again, doesn't make it the best conference. It makes it the most intriguing conference. It makes it the most dramatic to follow and watch. The Big Ten is getting close because the Big Ten now has Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, Nebraska, Wisconsin, and Michigan State that sort of all think that they should win. Now, Wisconsin and Michigan State are sort of new to that, but all of those teams sort of expect to win, but really it's just Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan. Really, it's been those three teams for the most part.
Right.
You know, Iowa's a really good fan base. In the ACC, and Julian, you can speak to this, do North Carolina fans wake up every year expecting to compete for championships in football? And that's, I just don't think that's, I mean, you can tell me if I'm wrong on that, but is that a fair, I mean, like, they don't, that's not like Auburn, where Auburn expects, they're like the second best team in their own division, Auburn is, and they still expect to compete for championships every year.
No, because unlike Auburn, North Carolina has other sports to actually compete in.
Okay.
That's a fair point.
That's,
I mean,
true. I mean, it's true, but it doesn't take, I mean, again, it's about, like, Virginia Tech, really great fan base, right? Like, passionate fan base. Clemson and Florida State are the two fan bases in the ACC, and Louisville is starting to get there, but not quite yet. Virginia Tech's got a great fan base, but, like, Boston College, Wake Forest, Duke, Virginia, like, these schools, these fans don't wake up every year expecting to compete for division titles.
Well,
Miami, they're sort of a weird anomaly because they're this huge private school, but, like, the campus, it's like Miami's such a weird beast. It's such a weird institution. Can be a great football program, but can also have really bad fan support. Like, it's just a very strange – Miami sort of, it's like a unicorn in this whole process.
Well, but in that sense, you just listed four or five schools, and I think you could probably also say, hey, Kentucky's not waking up thinking they're competing for championships. Vandy isn't.
Oh, I didn't go to the bottom of the ACC. I didn't go Syracuse.
No, and that's fair. But I think that there are still obviously schools. There's schools in every conference that have a little bit more reality. I get what you're saying, that there's obviously a different level of expectation to part of that. To me, that's part of what makes most of the country roll their eyes at the SEC. It's not because it's perceived fashion. It's passion. It's because it's
irrational.
Sort of irrational, and it just doesn't, yeah. Like Arbuckle just said, are we right to say, hey, everybody, chill out. You're not going to win a championship. Just calm down. And SEC fans don't want to hear that for the most part. But that's probably right for the most part. So I think that's why so much of the country sort of rolls their eyes at the whole process.
And that's like, why SEC fans roll their eyes at the bottom half of every other conference, because they're like, why don't you guys care?
But I think that's the funny thing. Is like, it doesn't – I'll use Purdue as an example, because I have a bunch of friends that are Purdue fans. They love Purdue football. I'm not going to say that they jump up and down and that they paint their chest and they go out and are animals and maniacs, but they love Purdue football.
There's a student section at every school.
They have season tickets and they go to the games and they watch the games and they're into it, but it doesn't rule their whole week. No, there's a difference to that. There absolutely is. They're passionate, like they enjoy it, but they also know that Purdue football more often than not stinks. Yeah. And they still go and they watch and they enjoy, but they're not expecting a different outcome than what logic tells them.
And they also go and they enjoy in significantly smaller numbers.
Sure.
And that they speak with spending money at merch and ticket sales and attendance.
Absolutely.
And booster donation dollars. The booster donation dollars alone at 7 or 8 of the top SEC schools is just stupid. Like, it's too much. Now, again, my point isn't that the SEC is the best conference here in this conversation. And I'm not suggesting that the SEC fans don't cross all kinds of lines. They do. That's the problem with being the most passionate, is that you guys are insane. Like, that's some of the problem. To me, what that makes it is for a more interesting and drama-filled regular season and off-season. Because in the ACC, you've got two, maybe three fan bases that wake up every year and think, we should compete for the championship this year, almost every year. There's maybe two or three. And in the Big Ten, you got maybe three or four. In the Big 12, you got two, Texas and Oklahoma. And in the Pac-12, you got a couple. And in the SEC, you got eight. And it's just, they all can't be good. Like, they're irrational to feel that way. But to me, that makes it a more interesting, drama-filled sort of thing, because it's so much passion and intensity. That's why I'm intrigued by that. Whereas when I watch Wake Forest, Boston College, Syracuse, NC State,
SEC, you have four rational fan bases that can compete, and you have four irrational fan bases that can compete.
If you look at the championship span of all the teams
that won, that was four teams. And then there's four others that were rational, and there's the –
Well, there's five different champions from the SEC in the BCS era. So
well, I'm talking about, well, I'm talking about the streak in a row. Like, I'm not talking about Tennessee winning in 98.
Yeah, I think that part of it does – I think Julian's a little right, though, about part of the difference is, when I went to high school in ACC country, as soon as football – in Maryland at the time was in the ACC. As soon as football season ended, the conversation was about basketball.
Yeah.
And it was heavy about basketball. If we try and carry a full hour today on college basketball
– In the SEC?
In the SEC.
You don't want to talk about Ben Howland?
Nobody's going to care. So I think that it's the passion for the one sport – but I think that's because there's only the one sport, really, to go to.
And one way is not better than the other. I'm not suggesting that North Carolina fans shouldn't be less passionate about
basketball.
One's not better or worse than the other. I just am – like, my intrigue – I think
– I was just saying that Carolina is great across all sports, so we don't need to just hang our whole – livelihood on football like Auburn.
And they are.
Okay, I know Auburn has a good swimming program, so sorry about.
Well, but
Auburn
if you want to go big
program.
Three, if you want to go big three, Florida's playing for a national championship right now and has won basketball national championships very recently and won football championships. So they're playing for a baseball championship tonight. If
they're
they
like
tonight.
One of the few athletic departments in the Southeastern right, Conference and, that actually competes in more than just football.
And baseball is very big in the SEC. Baseball is a very big sport. Softball is a huge sport in the SEC. Basketball is – they have made concerted efforts to try to get better at basketball.
Sure.
That's the one sport that just clearly – the ACC owns – I mean, that's the best basketball league other than like 3 years there for the Big East when it had all the current teams that are now in the ACC. The ACC is the best basketball league. It's not even close. And again, part of that's because the fans are so passionate about college basketball in that league. Virginia, you know, there's like one good run of football under George Welsh, and otherwise they've been largely irrelevant in football. Their basketball program, they pack John Paul Jones Arena
sure.
right now. So it is about what you care about and what you choose to care about, and SEC fans choose to care about football more than every other conference from top to bottom. And to me, again, that makes them bad fans at times. But it makes for intrigue because there are five or six legitimate – Georgia didn't win one of those championships Julian's talking about, but they were a couple of plays away from winning one. Tennessee won one in 98. Texas A&M is the anomaly, but you basically have seven programs that have national championship caliber
And that's why
like
I say
resume.
Four that actually have a rational expectation because they've actually
You think it's
won
irrational
it.
For Georgia to win a national title?
It seems irrational since they haven't won since 80.
I mean, I just.
I'm just talking like in a modern era and like recently winning. There's only four teams in the SEC have actually won, while there's everybody else is like, oh man, Ole Miss, have we
I
not
think,
let
well,
Hunter
Tennessee,
Henry do that?
I think Tennessee counts in 98 as a BCS champion. But,
I mean, 98 is a long time
but
ago.
It would,
it's
be
the
a huge, it would be a huge upset if Georgia turned around and won the national title this year. That would be a massive
this
upset.
This year's different.
Right.
We're not talking about this particular group of players. I mean, in Georgia, but, you could argue Georgia is one of the best three or four jobs in America.
Sure. Well, that's all good and well, but they don't win anything.
Yeah, so, but being one of the best jobs is what makes you capable of winning a national championship. If Nick Saban is at Georgia, he can win a national title in 2 seconds.
But you're asking about the level of general intrigue that comes into the SEC. And to me, as a non-SEC like, I'm an all-college football
right.
fan. I would rather pay attention to the top few teams in each conference and watch how they all sort of get through their own valleys and peaks. And
see the
and,
best of the best.
And mine, yeah, mine feels – I want to see the best of the best. I do not care, as a general rule, if I'm flipping through on a Saturday when I was on a tour bus sitting around, if I flipped through on a Saturday and it was Mississippi, Ole Miss, if that –
Well, those aren't national championship teams,
No,
though.
But
– I'm talking about Auburn, Georgia. Like, Auburn-Georgia is a top 15, top 20
Auburn,
matchup
Georgia,
routinely.
Auburn-Georgia, I would watch on TV, but I wouldn't listen to sports talk for a week and say, oh, my God, what's going to happen in the Auburn-Georgia game? Like, it just – SEC drama never sucked me in.
And those fans, that's the difference, is Auburn and Georgia could be 9-2 in those two in that game at the end of the year, the oldest rivalry in the Deep South, and they could be both out of the races in the East and the West. But that's going to be a huge game for SEC fans. And
right.
that's the difference between – that group and the and I'm again I'm not saying it's one's better than the other, it's just that's the difference. So as a fan of Oregon football myself, just as much as I am North Carolina football or you know Illinois football or SEC football, I love it all too. I've worked in the national college
sure,
sports world for a decade. I love it all. There is more intrigue in the second tier in the SEC than any other
but
league.
Your question to me was from my perspective, does that make it more interesting? And my answer is no. Like it just doesn't draw me in.
Okay.
The way the fans react to it just doesn't draw me in. I think it's what a lot of people roll their eyes to in the process of talking about the SEC. It doesn't make either side right or wrong. It's just not what connects me to the SEC. When we come back, it is time to go unfiltered. We will do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN. 102.5 The Game.